Podcast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris O'Brien is still recovering. He's an award-winning filmmaker, courtesy of the folks who voted for him and the people who... at the International UFO Congress. Had lots of fun there. Especially when Bryce Zabel started doing the Paracast and trying to upstage Chris O'Brien.
Yeah.
Which we won't let him do.
It's not hard to do.
Yeah, I know. So therefore,
it was fun though, Gene. It was fun. It was good seeing you again. I really do like the concept of being in the same room doing these shows. Doing this thing over Skype is okay, but man,
there's something about it. What it means is that every week you'd have to drive down here to Phoenix, and you'd have to get reimbursement from the network. We'll have to give them a budget. The network has to give us a budget. You know, most talk shows have no budget, so they have to give us a budget so that we can take Chris down here to do shows. That's how it's going to work. But I was thinking here, just as we did that show, the attendance you were telling me is a little bit down from last year. It's not because of lack of interest in UFOs.
It's the speaker lineup.
Sure, the guests were not as compelling. We had some pretty good people there. But others were Stan Romanek.
Yeah. Oh, well. What can you do? Like I told them, when they announced our film as winning the Evies, I mentioned in my acceptance speech that I kind of told everybody that they should, make sure and enjoy the chicken buffet, but go easy on the True Believer Kool-Aid.
This was not rubber chicken. Was it a pretty good chicken?
No, it wasn't. I wasn't that impressed. I expected better, but it was good. It was good enough.
Well, at least, of course, you could feed your face there. Any interesting anecdotes from the time that you roamed the highways and byways of that convention?
There was a few things came up. I spoke with this one gentleman, very, very bright guy, Mensa Society, smart, and he showed me some really interesting research that he'd been doing concerning the Greystoke Mansion on the highest hill in Beverly Hills that I think was built in the 20s or 30s. And he was explaining to me how it was actually built like a giant transmission device. Really compelling information. He'd be a good potential guest possibly for the Paracast with some of his work. He's into sacred geometry and how particular building materials and designs can be used for interesting magical and technological purposes. And it's where the movie Witches of Eastwick was filmed in this mansion. The movie with Jack Nicholson, Cher, Michelle Pfeiffer, and I forget who else was in it.
They tried to make a TV series of that, and it flopped.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, one other thing we had there, we had a close encounter, by the way, so to speak. With Whitley Strieber.
Oh,
right. And, I said...
Snowball's chance in hell.
Yeah, Snowball's chance in hell. We used this blue Snowball mic on last week's show. That's why he keeps talking to us about the Snowball's chance in hell. Anyway.
Well, I was talking about getting Whitley on the show.
Right, which is the same thing. So I asked Whitley, and he starts ranting about, all these people attacking me in the forums again. I said, you know what? Our forums consist of believers, people in the middle, and skeptics. He said, that must reflect then your audience. I said, it's a fraction of our audience. Let's be honest. Probably 2% of our audience goes to the forums at forum.theparacast.com. Not because they're bad forums. They're one of the larger forums of paranormal discussion on the planet. The thing is here, most people don't have the time to go places like that. So they don't participate. But I said, look, you're getting a nationwide, worldwide audience. And unlike most paranormal shows, Chris is a real paranormal field investigator. I am a real broadcast journalist. We're going to be fair with you. We're not going to ask you softball questions, but we're not going to attack you. We're going to ask you questions. And he says, I finished doing interviews for my current book. Maybe when my next book is out. No, and he ran out as fast as he could. It's kind of like, if you remember, I told a story on this show on the Tech Night Owl Live of a couple of encounters I had with the late Steve Jobs, the guy, of course, was co-founder of Apple, the famous tech guru and inventor. And I remember talking to him a couple of times. And when he got his fill of me, which would be very quick, of course, as most people just want to run away from me when they meet me the first time, he would continued to answer the question as he walked away as fast as he could. And I think Whitley Strieber must have remembered something or learned something from Steve Jobs.
He's a real strange fish. I'm telling you, I did a couple of book signings with him years ago, and I mentioned that I had had a group sighting in New Paltz at one of the pivotal weekends that are mentioned in Communion. Of course, I didn't find out about the correlation until years later, but I think I've described the sighting on the show, and I mentioned this to him, he asked what the date was, and I gave him the date, and he literally turned on his heels and ran away from me, and that was the last time I ever talked to him. And then I see him at the show, and he goes, "Oh, no, we've never met." And I said, "Oh, yeah, we have." He's an interesting fish. I don't know what to make of him. He's a very, very accomplished writer, incredibly good writer. But
he shouldn't be so temperamental. I mean, you know, if his experiences are precisely as he says they are, okay, if he's telling us the truth, he should be happy, and he's been in the media for years, to defend himself and to answer the question, not worry about the fact that I might ask him a tough question, because I will, or that our listeners will deliver questions that are tough because they will, or Chris won't ask a tough question because if what he says is true, if his experiences are genuine, he should understand that people are going to be skeptical and they're going to want him to, by proof if he can provide it, or just the logic of his descriptions, to answer the questions. And the invitation's still out to him, but he shouldn't be afraid of this. You know, just going on there for a love fest for a couple of hours, that might happen on some shows. It's not going to happen on the Paracast.
Well, since, what, 87, 88, he's had this rabid, you know, fan base who just, you know, accept everything that he's written about his alleged experiences at face value. And that's obviously how he and Ann prefer it. They like to be surrounded by the sycophants and the worshipers, similar to what I was seeing around Stan Romanek. One thing that was a little irksome for me is Bruce McAbee. Hopefully he's okay. It's unlike him to cancel at the last minute, but Bruce had to cancel. And instead of grabbing any number of very accomplished speakers and researchers, investigators who were there at the conference, they quickly turned around and filled the slot with Stan Romanek and his wife, Lisa.
And what's unfortunate here is, you think here, this had to be a last-minute decision, we understand, but this is the opposite of what Bruce McAbee would have done. Totally the opposite. We have a really interesting show today because we're going to look at strange things, possibly ancient astronauts or godlike beings of the past. And you've assembled a guy here named Scott Allen Roberts. Chris, tell us.
Well, Scott's a very interesting guy. I'm really not that familiar with his work prior to this, but he has a book out on the Nephilim, which I think is a very interesting, intriguing topic. Of course, the Nephilim were the godlike giants that existed supposedly thousands of years ago, and of course are mentioned in the Bible. And in Zechariah Sitchin's work, you'll find mentioned. So I think the historical aspect of this and how it was documented in some of the ancient texts is a very intriguing subject, and I think one that our listeners will be fascinated with.
And he has a magazine out called Intrepid, by the way. It's boldly going somewhere, and I guess we're going to have to find out where he's taking it and also about that book, which I've been looking at as we've been talking, The Rise and Fall of the Nephilim, The Untold Story of Fallen Angels. Wow. He's got quite a picture there. You know, you have this gentleman with the wings, and you have this woman who's rather attractive looking on the cover. It might be just enough reason to buy the book. Scott Allen Roberts coming up next. You're in
the Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
You expect professional service from your doctor, your accountant, and even the girl who takes your morning coffee order. Why not from your domain registrar, too? Namecheap.com provides stellar service with no sneaky upselling. We offer more features and security options for your website than there are ways to order a latte. And new domains come with WhoisGuard to protect your personal info. At Namecheap.com, you can get your domain for as low as $2.99. Now is a great time to get to know Namecheap.com.
IRS. The three most dreaded letters of the alphabet. If you owe back taxes, have unfiled tax returns, are receiving threatening letters, or have IRS agents coming to your home or place of business, you need an experienced IRS agent fighting on your side. Call the Tax Relief Division of the Law Offices of Craig Zimmerman at 800-342-8068. Spearheaded by a former IRS agent, we know how to negotiate a reduction in the tax you owe, stop wage garnishments, lift bank levies, and negotiate an affordable repayment plan. With 17 years as a practicing attorney and an A+ Better Business rating, we'll get the IRS off your back once and for all. In fact, recently, when an IRS employee had a tax problem, she called us. Stop being afraid and call right now for your free consultation at 800-342-8068. The phone call is free and there's no obligation, so call 800-342-8068. Again, that's 800-342-8068. Actual results based on individual client circumstances.
What if pain could be reduced, ailments could be alleviated, physical and mental stress could be eased, and blood circulation increase, all by simply lying down? Introducing the original Biomat. The Biomat is an FDA-registered medical device that combines deep-penetrating infrared space-age technology and revitalizing negative ions with the incredible healing power of amethyst crystals. A Biomat can boost your immune system, relieve pain and stiffness, reduce stress and fatigue, and assist in detoxifying your body. Join the thousands of people reporting relief from chronic pain, fibromyalgia, arthritis, sports injuries, insomnia, and much more. Each Biomat comes with a lifetime trade-in and 3-year warranty. Learn more at bio-mats.com, spelled bio-mats.com, or call 360-944-8692. That's 360-944-8692. Visit bio-mats.com today and enhance your life with a Biomat.
Do you suffer from low-functioning adrenal or thyroid? Did you know that mercury from your dental fillings comes off of your teeth both as a vapor and as particles into your body? Wherever mercury deposits in your body, it stops cells from functioning normally. Animal studies show that mercury causes kidney function to drop by 60%. Mercury deposited into your adrenals or thyroid will cause a corresponding drop in function. The number one method by which your body detoxifies itself of mercury is glutathione. The number one superfood that helps turn on all 10 trillion cells of your body to produce glutathione is non-denatured whey protein from grass-fed cows. After investigating most high-end whey proteins on the market, only one is the most non-denatured, the most active, the most complete, and in our opinion, the most powerful in what nature originally put into the fresh raw whey. It is One World Whey. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldwhey.com. That's oneworldwhey.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
On the Paracast with Gene and Chris, we have Scott Allen Roberts. He has a new book called The Rise and Fall of the Nephilim, The Untold Story of Fallen Angels, Giants on the Earth. And as I was saying, Scott, before you joined us, I like the picture, especially of that woman on the cover. I think that makes the book.
Thank you.
Right. Was she based on a live person or just a drawing?
Well, that was a painting, and I cannot pronounce the guy's name. He's one of the, I guess, the older masters, but not as old as your as your Renaissance master, somebody in the late 1800s. Can't remember his name. It's in the book. It's a French name. But that is actually a picture of Cupid running off with, oh, and I can't think of what her name is either. And it's I thought it was a great picture. It was, you know, the whole concept out there behind the Nephilim for a lot of people is that it's fallen angels, and there was this angelic connection, which I don't think there is. But that's the why I put that picture on that on the cover. I thought it was very evocative of what the topic is about.
Let's go back into your involvement in the subject, how you started. What is your background?
Well, my background is conservative, fundamentalist, Baptist, Bible college and seminary, and that's where all my training took place. And in that setting, we were always taught, you know, the Bible is our only foundation for faith and practice. And while I don't want to step on anybody's toes or necessarily offend anybody's religious sensibilities, I found that that just didn't answer some of the questions I had.
So in general, you start out as what they call in the common vernacular, the religious right.
Yes, religious right. As a matter of fact, some of my background even involved working for people who did work for the Moral Majority back in the early 1980s.
Now, the Moral Majority, was that the first Tea Party?
You know, I don't think so, because I don't see the Tea Party as being as far religiously right as the Moral Majority. I see them in a different vein than that. I think you've got a lot of your religious right that wants to be involved with the Tea Party because they say, well, they uphold our certain standards, and I don't know why it is, but it seems like you see an awful lot of conservatives tend to that more religious right side. And I'm conservative, but I'm not part of the religious right. So I bristle at that notion a little bit myself.
I understand. Okay, so when you start considering the fact of physical beings, perhaps, that came here in ancient times.
Yes.
Heresy or what? How did you get caught up in this?
I can tell you this. The reason I did a study on the Nephilim was I had questions about who they were. I always saw the passage in Genesis. And what I didn't know, and the way it was never taught, was that it's really the preamble to the flood of Noah story in the book of Genesis. And so what I did with this book is I wanted to look at the theological slant and say, if I want to compare it to anything else that's out there, other theories that are out there, I've got to separate myself in a bit and look at it as part of the religious mythology out there of the flood stories, of the creation stories, and try to get down to some facts. And I say rather tongue-in-cheek, it's kind of like me saying, well, of course fairies exist because the leprechauns say so. I'm supporting the theology from within the theology to take a look at it and see what it's really saying. And once I got below the surface of the surface stories and the things that were taught in church and synagogue, things like that, I found a very different version of events starting to come out when you get into the Hebrew language and start tearing it apart a bit and saying, what's the subtext here? Is this a cover story for a different kind of an event? Is it just an allegory? Is it mythology? And, of course, you can't prove any of that because there's no way to bring any of this into scrutiny under some kind of scientific methodology. But the methodology that adheres is one that says there is so many cultural references to this kind of event that seem to cross-reference with this, only with different names, different series of events, crossover tie-in threads through this whole thing. She says something happened, and something happened big in human history, but it's hard to eradicate it from theology because it's housed in the theological histories of so many different cultures.
Okay, the thing I always wonder about stories like this, you have similar stories in various sacred texts around the world, but we didn't have 24/7 cable. You know, a couple of thousand years ago. So how did these stories get spread from one place to another, or did these advanced beings just go everywhere and talk to people?
Well, here's something I even poke a little fun at it in my book. It's either there was some huge spiritual religious symposium 7,000 years ago, and they all smoked the same peyote and all went back to their various cultures with this story and said, we're just going to put our twist on it. Or there was an event or series of events that were commonplace around the world and many different cultures experienced them. As for the flood account, which I'll reference that a lot because the Nephilim are really the preamble to the flood account in the Genesis passage, the Hebrew Bible, that story has over 600 different cultures around the world that date back into ancient times that have their version of those events. And like I say, the Hebrew version is Noah, but then you get into things like as outstanding as like the Gilgamesh epic and things like that. So you've got different casts of characters in all these different cultures. It'd be exhaustive to write a book about it, so I just named a few in my book. This is where you say there is a common thread, while every different culture seems to have their own version of events. So did these beings appear to all these different peoples? I think you see it in some of the different cultures. One that's very outstanding for me, because of my own roots, is the Celtic culture. You've got the Tuatha De Danann, the children of Danu. They were the bright, shining, giant kings of heaven that came down and intermingled with humans and taught them knowledges and things. They are actually synonymous with what became known as the Elven folk. So if you think of your, Tolkien type of elf, the Elven folk, and you've got a picture of who the Tuatha De Danann were supposed to be, at least putting a quick visual to it. And they receded into the Hollow Hills eventually and became known as the Elven. So this is one of the cultures that has a similar story to these giants. And they're even called in the Celtic tradition, they were called the bright shining ones, the shining kings of heaven, the Tuatha. And you start getting into even the Genesis passage, and you find that some of these characters are referred to as the bright shining ones. They relate to Psalm 82, which you have God talking to the divine council and calling them the bright shining princes of heaven. What you have to do with some of these stories, especially in the case, which is what I did, I went to the Hebrew Bible and dug out the stuff there and compared it to other things. You have to dig beneath the surface. You have to look at how it compares to other passages. You can't always just take, and sorry, Christians and Jews out there, you just can't take the Bible at face value sometimes, just like anything else. You got to dig and find out what it's really saying.
Now, part of the problem in trying to interpret these sacred texts is that we're looking at English translations. And
right.
Years ago, I knew of a fellow, Yonah Fortner, a Hebrew scholar who could read 20, 30 different languages. And he was able, obviously, to read as much as possible original texts to come up with his interpretations. So in doing this kind of study, how far could you go back? Did you have to bring in language experts to help you to find out what these things meant? We have Scott Allen Roberts joining us. The book is The Rise and Fall of the Nephilim with Gene and Chris. You're in
Paracast.
Of searching for great talk radio.
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Have you ever seen a U.S. postage stamp featuring Abraham Lincoln, Ben Franklin, or George Washington? If you're into stamp collecting, you know it's a fun, affordable hobby. America's leading stamp dealer is the Mystic Stamp Company, and they want you to have their free 140-page color catalog. Go to mysticstampad.com, the website of the Mystic Stamp Company, serving stamp collectors since 1923. Mystic Stamp is well known in the industry for its experience, superior customer service, and an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau. Go to mysticstamp.com. ad.com to request your free 140-page U.S. stamp color catalog packed with collecting tips, special offers, color photos, and over 4,600 available stamps. Call 800-433-7811 or go to mysticstampad.com. That's 800-433-7811 and ask for your free U.S. stamp catalog or mysticstampad.com. Mystic Stamp Company, America's leading stamp dealer.
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
On the Paracast with Gene and Chris, 120 miles separate, so that we don't scream at each other and pull each other's hair out, or hit each other with axes. That's how it works.
Is that like a marriage made in heaven?
Nah, we get along just great. Yeah, he's my bro.
Yeah, I saw The Daughters of Man and was inspired.
That's how it goes.
Right.
Oh, yes. Scott Allen Roberts joining us. We're talking about his research process. Okay, so how did you take this study of biblical texts? Did you try to go back to the original language studies or what?
Yes. As a matter of fact, now, you mentioned your scholar that you, by name, you said he reads and writes 23 different languages. It's about 22 more languages than I read or write.
And that's probably about 22 and a half more than I do. But Yona, unfortunately, is no longer with us. I sure wish he was, because he would have been such a wonderful guest on the Paracast. But he left us before the show came to be.
Well, what I have done is refer to people like him. I will go when I was in seminary and we had to write term papers and all that. And when I was in ministry and we were teaching or preaching and we wanted to relate to the original language. Yeah, I took ancient Hebrew in seminary. I took ancient Greek. Ask me today if I remember a lick of either of them. And I don't because I haven't used them much in the last 25 years. So I go to and I try to dig out the source points for people who have either talked about this and write about it from within a because it was from the Hebrew Bible. I wanted to go to Jewish scholars and I wanted to go to Hebrew scholars and Christianity as well. Michael Heiser is a guy that comes out as a name. I quote him a couple of times in my book. I looked at some of his research. I looked at some Jewish scholars. I got them quoted in my book. I didn't memorize their names. And by the way, when I'm doing these interviews, I think, man, I need to reread my book and familiarize myself with some of what I've written. Just to make sure I'm covering all my points. But, yeah, so I hailed to people who know the language better than I do. And I wrote a chapter about Elohim. That was, by the way, one of the very first things that caused some of my questioning in my faith, or at least in my practice, was when I came across the name Elohim in the Old Testament. It's the name for God, one of the many names for God used. And in the Hebrew, it's Elohim, and it's used almost 3,000 times in the Old Testament. But never did I have a full understanding of what that word meant, because when you parse it down in the Hebrew, it's just like the word Nephilim. They both have that him ending, which is, in the Hebrew, that is a plural suffix tacked onto a word to pluralize it. And so Elohim, El being the name of God, the E-L, which, by the way, hails back to the Sumerian prior to the Hebrew, you've got the word Elohim, which basically means, in translation, God of many gods or God among many gods. It's a word that is singular and plural at the same time, depending on the context of the words used in the passage around it. And this is the stuff that, and again, I say in my book, I said, your eyes could gloss over when we start talking about the etymology of ancient Hebrew language. But you got to be impassioned about it, because once you start learning this stuff, it's like opening the door in a dark room and letting some light in. When I found out Elohim meant something different than I thought I had been taught that it meant, it started opening up other doors, because you see how Elohim relates to so many of the other characters that are involved in the Nephilim story and the backstory. Going to Hebrew scholars, I have to do that, because it's like I could talk about lung cancer, but I'm not a doctor, so I'd have to refer to what doctors write about it to say anything intelligent about it. To me, if you're going to study a topic like this, you better dig a little bit and know what the hell you're talking about. And if you don't know it firsthand and you're not the scholar, you better refer to sources who do, so you can back up some of your claims.
Of course, I guess the big problem in doing this kind of research is to try to take the words set down by people we regard as amazingly primitive these days and try to interpret what they really meant, how their culture influenced those descriptions, and translate them to the present day. That had to be really, really difficult.
Yeah, that's the hard part. That's even the hard part. If you go to church on Sunday, that's even the hard part in daily practical stuff that ministers try to pull out of the Bible. When the New Testament tells you that a woman shouldn't speak in church, and if she has a question, she has to go home and ask her husband. How does that fly in our churches nowadays? You have to look at it culturally. You have to look at the audience it was written to and the context.
And you have to think how many divorces you'd have if women had to behave that way.
And if I turned to my wife ever in church and said, hey, you asked me at home while you're cooking dinner, I'd probably get a black eye. So
oh boy.
My wife swears like a Randy Sailor, so she would probably add some nice blue language with it.
My wife learned from her mother how to speak proper. Her mother was just a great person. If you crossed her, or anyone crossed a member of her family, or even her family by marriage, she would use the proper words to put them in their place.
Nice.
Yes. Unfortunately, she's no longer with us. Okay, so we look at trying to interpret ancient cultures, what they saw. Now, is it possible there is nothing physical involved? They all were spiritual encounters of some sort.
It's very possible. It's like I say about all of this stuff. There is no proof for any of it. But I compare that to even our science of the day. My first chapter in the book is entitled Science Almighty. And the reason I do that is I want to dig into the scientific aspect, but say it's sometimes you got to kick out the props of some of the things that you think you know, whether it be theology, religion, spirituality, skepticism, or science. You got to kick some of those props out. Because while there is no way to prove that the Nephilim ever even existed, the same thing could be said. You extrapolate that thought over to the evolutionary ascendancy of Homo sapiens. Now, science will tell you that there's a theory of evolution out there. Now, I'm not a creationist, but I am also not a pure evolutionist, because I say this. Evolutionary science takes as much exponential leaps of faith to make the connections as it does to say God exists. So we're all operating by a certain modicum of faith. If you have all these different stages of what science has identified as the ascendancy of human evolution, there is still to this day no DNA linkage between any of them. They're still looking for the missing links. And the problem with that is that they put it forth as a solid science when in fact it's a science filled with gaps that take great exponential leaps of faith to fill in the holes.
Well, the other possibility could be in the middle, which is that E.T. came here and he did some genetic engineering, or it did some genetic engineering, and here we are.
That's something I mentioned, too, is that it's kind of, for me, a flip side of the same coin. One side of the coin might say, It's all this creation, the spirituality, and this is all correct. Or you flip the coin over and you say, now, this is not a new thought nowadays. It was new when I was a kid growing up in the late 60s and the 70s, and that was that thought that, maybe ancient man only perceived as gods, demons, devils, angels, and all of those things in between, things that were nothing of the sort but just non-human intelligences. But once again, you have no way to prove either of them happened. All we know is we see these quote-unquote evidences. It's like this. You guys are involved in the paranormal as well. I've been as well. You can say to a skeptic or a scientist, I've got this mound of evidence of EVPs and things moving on my tape recorder or my DVR and whatever. None of that is acceptable evidence to anybody who has a scientific or a skeptical mind, because they go by the skeptic's credo, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidences. And so anecdotal evidence to a scientist or a skeptic isn't going to cut it. Same thing with this. You can't use the scientific methodology and say to some non-human intelligence in a lab setting and say, okay, you two start procreating, and we're going to do this over and over again until we've proven our hypothesis. You can't do it. It's not there. So what you're using are these old records that, again, span many different cultures to say, now if everybody was writing about a version of this, does that bear some sort of scientific methodology in and of its own, in that you can't prove it happened, but you can show that so many different cultures talked about the same thing, but they didn't talk about the same story. So that means they all had versions of the story. They all had versions of the event, which says there may have been a common event that they were all talking about or similar events that happened to them all.
Yeah, and this is a cross-cultural tradition as well.
And we'll get into more of that very salient aspect. We're talking to Scott Alan Roberts with Gene, with Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
That's what it sounds like when a burglar kicks in the door of a dark house that looks like no one is home. Don't let your home be the next target. Make it look like someone is home watching television with Fake TV. Fake TV is a small electronic device that makes the same light as a real television, so from outside it looks like someone is home watching TV. Fake TV plugs in just like a lamp on a timer, but is far more convincing to burglars. Fake TV deters burglars, costs far less than an alarm, and is highly recommended by numerous police departments. Use it anytime you're away from home. To order your Fake TV for only $34.95, go to faketv.com. Or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. Each additional Fake TV is only $29.95. So get one for you and one for a loved one for safety, security, and peace of mind for both of you. Call 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to FakeTV.com. FakeTV.com, the burglar deterrent.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
In a coming apart world, you need something to keep it tied together. That something is Atwood Rope, the highest quality rope made in the USA, from exotic braids for military, rescue, arborists, shipyards, tow line, or boating. Quality rope at affordable prices you and your customers can depend on. Find a dealer or shop online at atwoodrope.net. Enter promo code RADIO to receive 100 feet of 550 paracord free with purchase. Atwood Rope, working to keep the world tied together.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy-free, contains all-natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com, Terraganics.com. Or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
We have Scott Allen Roberts exploring ancient advanced beings with Gene and Chris in the Paracast. As we broke for that important interval, Chris started to frame a question. Chris?
I was going to make the observation, Scotty, that this is not only a Near Eastern or Western tradition. You find stories of giants and interbreeding with humans of some godlike beings all over the world. My good friend Clifford Mahudi is a Zuni elder. And he's mentioned these types of details in some of their mythology. And I think it's indicative of, you know, when you look at so many different cultures coming up with a very similar take on a subject, the chances of this being coincidental, I think, are astronomical. There's got to be some sort of truth there at the core somewhere. It may not have survived intact through thousands of years, but it is an indication you know, this is definitely worthy of study. And, you know, the whole Nephilim thing, I don't think we've really defined totally what we're talking about. For some of our newer listeners, perhaps you should go in and give a little bit more details, especially about the genetic part of this and the interbreeding with humans.
Okay. Well, the source point for the word Nephilim, which, by the way, has become a word that's even crossed over into pop culture. You see movies with Cuba Gooding Jr. about the Nephilim that they unfroze and things like that. So the word has become synonymous with some kind of being that was once an off-breeding or a hybrid breeding with humans. The source point for the word itself, though, is the Hebrew Bible. It's the book of Genesis. You can also find it in one of the apocryphal books, Enoch, which I hail to a lot in my research to establish the theology behind this. You also find it in the book of Jubilees, the book of Jasher, and they're even mentioned in the more recently, if you will, in the last 20 years uncovered, the book of Giants that was part of the Dead Sea Scrolls. So one of the mistranslations of the word was that that Nephilim means giant. It doesn't. There's another word in the passage. You go to Genesis 6, and it talks about, and in those days the sons of God came down and intermingled with the daughters of men and had children by them. They were known as the Nephilim and the heroes of old and the men of renown. Now, by the way, that term, the men of renown, that phrase in the Hebrew is referring to the Giborim in Hebrew, in the Hebrew sense of what was going on there. And the Giborim were known as giants, mighty men of valor. And what you've also got here is something that looks like it's starting to talk about maybe some of our mythologies about the Greek gods and the pantheons of different gods hailed from these sources. The only problem is that Genesis was written long after many of these things existed in different cultures. So the Nephilim are the offspring of, according to Genesis, the sons of God, in the Hebrew, the Bene Ha Elohim, who came down and intermingled with the daughters of human men and had children by them. And then it says, and the Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward. Then it goes into talking about the mortality of man and the number of years he lived, and right directly into the story of Noah. So the connection is not made, in the English version anyway, it's not made very quickly, but there's this hint by the author of Genesis that there was a race that was bequeathed by the mixing of spirit beings of some kind and human women. In my settings where I grew up, we kind of hinted at this at the beginning, I think, Gene, with your question. At the very beginning, when I learned this stuff in seminary, which was very slight, we were taught, well, this is obviously not referring to non-human beings. This has to do with the sons of the prophets or the sons of the wealthy who came down and intermingled with the women of the common folk in the villages. And I said, but why then does the Hebrew make a stark contrast between the Bene Ha'elohim and the daughters of Adam? They don't use the same term. They don't say that this was the sons of Adam, who were the upper classes or the schools of the prophet, intermingling with the daughters of Adam. They make the contrast between the two. And the purpose for the contrast is to create a stark difference between the two beings. But the author of Genesis, who, by the way, I believe was Moses, and I write about that, and the tradition, I think, is pretty strong, and there's good grounds for it, talks about these beings almost as an offhand remark. It's almost like, oh, yeah, there were these Nephilim, and they were bequeathed by this and that, but now let's talk about the flood. And it's almost an aside. Go to the book of Enoch, however, which is an apocryphal book. It's a book that was booted out of the canon of Scripture by one of Constantine's councils, started in the Council of Nicaea, because they could not decide that there was unanimity on whether or not Enoch was a scriptural book. And but by the way, on the book of Enoch itself, it's quoted by many of the prophets in the Old Testament. Paul and Peter in the New Testament quote from the book of Enoch. Jesus himself quotes from the book of Enoch. Yet the Council of Nicaea and other councils following under Constantine decided it wasn't scripture, even though all those people used it and quoted from it. But in Enoch, you have the same exact passage. It starts with the same language as the Genesis 6 passage. But then it goes, instead of just 4 to 5 verses, it goes into chapter after chapter after chapter about these beings who, the sons of God, the Bene Ha'elohim, Enoch refers to them as the watchers who came down to the earth and intermingled with the daughters of men. As a matter of fact, in Enoch it says, they descended to the slopes of Mount Hermon, which is in northern Israel. It's today in the Golan Heights, straddling Syria and Lebanon. And it was there that there were 200 of them, and they made a pact with each other to go into human women. It doesn't say that there were any women versions of them, female versions, and that they went into men, too. It just said they went into women, chose any ones that they wanted. They lusted after them. They cohabited with them. They made homes with them. They had offspring, and they taught humans the forbidden knowledges, the knowledges of things like cosmetics, the making of mirrors, the making of weapons, the suns, the signs of the sun, moon, and stars, and herbology and things like that. And why those were forbidden, I don't know. But
it sounds like they didn't have a prime directive.
No prime directive.
Okay.
Or they violated the prime directive because in their midst, you know, Shemyaza in the book of Enoch says, he's one of these prefects of the 200. He says, wait a minute, if we do this, we're going to get our butts kicked. And they don't say by God. They just said, we're going to be in big trouble because we're not supposed to be doing this. And it says all the rest of them just pressed him and said, no, we're doing this anyway. You're either with us or you're without us. And so he joined them. He was their leader. And so he was basically saying, if you guys do this, it's my head on the block. This is the, you know, if you read between the lines and want to put a little common vernacular in it, you're talking about ancient texts again. But in these passages, one of the, by the way, the big misnomers about these beings is, for years, they were thought to be fallen angels, but never in any of these passages do they use the word malak, malakai, for angels in the Hebrew. They're always referred to as the sons of God, the Elohim, and things like that. And this is where you can go to Psalm 82 and start seeing a correlation. Different passages in the Bible talk about a group called the Divine Council. And it says in there, and then we talked about Elohim, I'm going to interchange Elohim for where it says God in this passage. In Psalm 82, it says, and Elohim stood, singular, in the midst of the Elohim, same word, plural, and said to them, plural, you are all Elohim, you are the bright shining princes of heaven. Now you take that term, bright shining, and this takes you back even further than the account in Genesis 6, back to creation and the creation family, which, just as the flood, you've got every different culture has its own version of a creation story and its own version of a creation couple or creation couples and their offspring being twins or multiple births. And there was always some kind of trickster character that came in and either impregnated the woman or impregnated the daughter of the first couple, and that bequeathed and started all the problems. This relates to Adam and Eve, the Genesis Garden of Eden story, and the serpent in the garden.
About a racial consciousness or worldwide allegory here. We're talking possibly of a physical event that occurred that was widely reported.
You can't prove that Adam and Eve ever existed, but if they did as two individuals, I think is irrelevant because you're never going to know for sure. But what it does talk about in all these cultures is a first family that had interactions with these beings. In the Genesis account, the point I was trying to make here, remember the bright shining ones. This is what the divine counselor called. You have Nakosh, the word in the Hebrew for the serpent in the garden. The serpent character is called Nakosh. And by definition, it means trickster, bringer of knowledge, illuminator, bright shining one. And this is the one who tempted Eve in the garden. And the whole context of the whole thing in the garden, you got to step back and look at it. Get out of the box. Look at it. While all the verbs and the action nouns in the Hebrew are all fairly neutral and generic terms, like he gave, he offered, she took, she ate, she gave to Adam, he took, he ate. But the whole context is one that's sexual in nature. And it talks about after the fall, when God's cursing everybody, he says about the serpent, he says, and there will be enmity between the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman.
We'll get into more of this with Scott Allen Roberts, with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, Ted Anderson announcing a great way to listen to radio on the telephone. By calling 760-569-7700, you'll be hearing GCNLive.com programs in seconds. Come to GCNLive.com, find your favorite host's dedicated phone number, and hear them 24-7. You heard me right. Every show has a dedicated phone number. Stop by GCNLive.com and bookmark their number today. And again, that's 760-569-7700. We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.